All right, friends. Whoop. Get that little picture up there. Hello. Hi. All right. We had to stop about 40 minutes into the previous tape because there was some uncertainty about whether the recording was actually occurring. We had finished then the brief epitomes, the terse phrases, the most illustrative extracts and descriptions of the Blessed One, stanza number 6, and now we're on to the final stanza, which is that of number 7. So let us see. First, I think the best thing to do would be to read it so we gain again the sense of what we're talking about, and then we can relate these words in the old commentary to what Master D.K. Is saying are the essences of the matter. So, the Blessed One sought the pathway into forms, but held with firmness to the hand of the magician. He sought to reconcile the pilgrim who was himself to life in form. He sought to bring the world of disorder in which he found himself into some kind of order. He wandered far into the deepest depths and became immersed in chaos and disorder. He could not understand, yet still held to the hand of the magician. I guess, you see, his mental faculties are not such that he can as yet understand. He sought to bring about that order that his soul craved. So he's already in the soul stage. He's gone beyond simply the monad's descent into the causal body, and the soul is now producing incarnations. He talked with all he met, but his bewilderment increased. To the magician thus he spoke, "The ways of the Creator must be good. Behind all that which seems to be must be a plan. Teach me the purpose of it all. How can I work immersed in deepest matter? Tell me the thing that I must do." The magician said, "Listen, O worker in the furthest world, to the rhythm of the times. Note the pulsation in the heart of that which is divine. Retire into the silence and attune yourself unto the whole. Then venture forth. Establish the right rhythm. Bring order to the forms of life which must express the plan of deity. For this Blessed One, release is found in work. He must display his knowledge of the plan by the sounding of those words which will evoke the builders of the forms, and thus create the new." All right, so let's see what is said. Well, the important thing is to get the little red bracket. Black magic. Well, this is a consciousness exerting its powers while in a state of ignorance and confinement in the lower worlds and prostituting the powers of the soul to the acquisition of material objectives, or the use of magical powers for selfish ends. The method of connecting the thought or the idea with materialization belongs to this type. This type can materialize thought more successfully than most types. But will the materialization be for the sake of the whole? That is the question. Okay. The power, this is a funny one, and you know, it seems to come maybe from Master DK's own experience. The power to sit upon the fence till the selfish values emerge. So being too afraid to make a decision for evil or darkness, a decision for negativity, but allowing it to emerge without any risk to oneself or one's reputation. So, you know, there's kind of a Libran quality here when you think of Libra as the seventh sign, this being the seventh ray. So through, let's just say, through non-decision, gaining the selfish objectives which one really wants. So you sometimes see people hesitating. It may be that they really don't know which way to go, but it may be that they're too afraid. They don't want to choose for the good, and they don't want to be seen choosing for the ill. So they simply wait and do not lend their corrective force to the emerging of the good. They do not lend their corrective force to prevent the emerging of evil. So if one sits still long enough in the presence of certain trends, one can pretty well guess that one wants the negative to emerge. All right, it's an unusual statement, but seems to connect with the, I don't know, sometimes we might say there can be a lack of initiative in the seventh ray type. A disorder and chaos through misunderstanding of the plan. Well, there may be well-organized creations which only cause more chaos in the environment, because inimical to harmony, inimical to the true organization of the whole. It's like having a well-run fortress, well-organized in itself, but which causes trouble and chaos and disorder in all the surrounding environment. So, you know, with the fourth ray, harmony with the part and not the whole, and in this case, organization of the part and not really caring about the right rhythm and organization of the whole. The wrong use of speech to bring about chosen objectives. So this is, in a way, the misuse of magical words. Now remember, there is a throat center connection here, because at a certain point, the throat center is ruled by the third ray. I think it's a bit farther in the process once positivity has come about, but the throat center is a form building and form creating center, and this is a form building and creating ray. So the manifestational powers of the throat center are known. So is this lying? Is this misrepresentation? Is this misrepresenting the truth of things, so that the process can be subtly skewed to bring about selfish objectives? It's what I can call an orchestrating for the purposes of achieving a negative result and finding the words which will organize the process in the direction of manifesting what is desired, even if it is in terms of the whole undesirable. Untruth, it's vague, it's not a direct lie, but it is a veiling of the truth. It's not coming forth with the truth. It is posing, imposing a false order on a true order, and misrepresenting the structure of the true and truthful order. So, you know, is that an untruth? Well, an untruth occurs through passivity and a refusal to express the truth. It's an evasion, a refusal to express the truth. It's a passive form of lying. It's a quietness, a quiet in the face of the lie when one could contradict it. It's kind of a cowardice based upon the desire that circumstances not be disrupted by true speech. So you must admit it's an unusual formulation. He could have just said lies. But untruth is an evasive, passive, incomplete, misrepresentational statements. Let's just call it that. Misrepresentational statements. Misrepresentational statements. Okay. And we've all seen that kind of rather selfish, somewhat cowardly hanging back instead of engaging in the process which would bring truth forward. Not engaging in the process which would bring truth forward. Or should we say, letting the lie or false structure stand when one knows better and could restructure it. Restructure the falsity. I think there's a lot of subtlety in the seventh ray types, and they can get their way through action which is not overt. Getting one's way through action which is not overt. Sex magic, which is again, you know, using the creative force for selfish objectives, using the powerful creative sex force for selfish objectives, a form of prostitution, selling out the second aspect to the third. The selfish perversion of soul powers. Now, you know what's interesting? Sex is a soul power. There's so much perversion going on today. Uranus, the seventh ray planet, is the, I can call it, planet of perversion. And Uranus rules the sacral center in so many advanced people, and there is a rebellion against the way God, the planetary logos, intended things to be. And man becomes the measure of all things, or should we say that human desire becomes the measure of all things. This is not... This is not as it should be, and it's such a popular point of view that when one says something, as I've just said, it's considered to be old-fashioned and fundamentalistic and relying upon an old conception of God and not realizing that somehow deviation is not deviation. Well, Uranus is the planet of deviation. So it's easy for the seventh ray type to magically use these powers. I think a lot of homosexuality, for instance, goes along with the seventh ray. I've seen it all the time, and I've seen it also in many of those who follow Aleister Crowley and some of those seventh ray soul magicians. They have a special relationship to the sacral center, which is not the procreative relationship. It's a relationship which somehow builds the ego and which is involved with various psychological inversions. We really need the ageless wisdom and the story of reincarnation to straighten this out, I do believe. So, perversion, Uranus, seventh ray, sex magic, misuse of this force, also, you know, also for hypnotic purposes. Also for hypnotic purposes, to bring others under one's power through sex. And of course that's, you know, been done forever. It's playing to the magnetism of the sacral center, and it's allowing oneself to achieve one's personal objectives through the use of sex. Many people do that, you know, so to speak, sleeping their way to the top and the casting couch and all the rest of it. Those are minor instances of something that can be really even much worse. But leading to white magic, the white magic of the soul, the use of soul powers, not for perverse ends which run contrary to divine design. In other words, we have two patterns. We have two type of organized patterns, and one is divine and the other is conceived by human desire. And they are contrasting and clashing patterns. At least with white magic, the soul is the true magician, and the extension of the soul in incarnation through the personality, adheres to the higher pattern and to the higher suggestion. And so these powers will not be used for personal gratification or for personal objectives, but to achieve that which is in line with the divine plan and the larger whole, the spiritual ends. The identification of oneself with reality, we might call this the finding of the archetypes in the world of being. So the highest and the lowest meet, we are told, in this seventh ray word of power. Well, identify with the pattern in heaven. Maybe I should capitalize that so that it can manifest on earth. So, you know, what am I? Well, I'm simply the worker in the lower world, but my true nature is at one with the archetype, and even more, at one with the pure being which the archetype represents. Right order through right magic, and should we say, you know, not chaos and disorder. So not black magic, but right magic, magic of the right-hand side, not of the left-hand side. Of course, I suppose, you know, the ultimate magic is of the central channel. But right order is what kind of order? It's clearly archetypal order. And right magic manifests archetypal order, we can say. Archetypal order. The power to cooperate with the whole and not just make organizations within the whole which are disruptive. So organizing the whole, understanding the objectives of the whole, of the planetary logos, and not creating selfish orders which are disruptive and obstructive to the will of the whole. Understanding of the plan, and that in considerable detail. The plan is that which is to be manifested in time and space and which represents the purpose. So, you know, we might say, what is the sequence of, no, SEQ, of the intended manifestation. Not so many know it so well as the seventh ray type. First we do this, then we do this, then we do this, and according to the law of economy, nothing is wasted. In the law of expediency, there is speed well in control and a manifestation which is not disrupted by all kinds of mistakes in the preparatory process. The magical work of interpretation, this is interesting, that that which is high can be understood by the pattern of that which is low. That which is high can be brought into the field of mind to impress itself upon that which is low. We can always reach into heaven and where we find obscure things and bring those obscurities to earth, but in a simplified and clear manner. So, you know, basically, Mercury is the magician card, and we have, you know, the hand raised into the blue of heaven and the other plunged into the sea of forms. Mercury is the magician. Mercury is the relationship between the high and the low. Mercury is also the interpreter, and especially the art of interpretation is very much the third ray as well. But it's bringing two things into relation with each other, and on the basis of what we do know, somehow discerning the meaning of patterns which we do not fully understand. But it's also working with the law of analogy, and I think it can be said of the seventh ray, you know, of the seventh ray, can be said as above, so below. Because the highest and, well, highest and the lowest are brought into relation. Manifestation of divinity, not much to be said there. It's the great ray of manifestation which is organizing the lower forces so they truly represent the higher pattern. So organizing the lower forces so they truly represent the higher pattern. So often the lower forces can be well organized indeed. You know, you look at certain kind of corporate functioning in the world today, it's very antisocial in a way. It certainly serves the investors in the corporation. It serves those who work for that organized aggregation, we call it a corporation, but it does not serve divinity. There is a manifestation there, but it is based upon selfish desire and selfish thought. Of course, you know, not entirely, obviously. But there is a tendency for the lack of accountability of these great organizations. You say, well, look, I didn't do it. It's just the business I'm in, just the organization. It's their policy. I'm not responsible, you know. Of course, people do have to learn how to take responsibility for the actions of the whole in which they are engaged. So, yes, the manifestation of divinity, bringing heaven to earth, bringing the highest faithfully into the lowest, making it possible for the pattern in heaven to be replicated on earth. So let's put that one down. The replication of the pattern in heaven upon the earth. One day, the great god, Sanat Kumara, will, as it were, walk the earth. He is an incredible organization of energies, and those energies will have organized all of the elemental lives in a replicative manner so that the highest and the lowest truly will have met. Well, let's take a look at the contrasts. I think there's a little more to say after this, but the contrasts of the terms. Let's take a look at them. And here it should be. All right. So ray 7. Well, black magic, white magic. The contrast, selfishness, selflessness. Selfish ends and spiritual ends. An obvious and direct contrast. Power to sit upon the fence until the selfish values emerge. Well, if one is identified with reality, one does not want to see those obstructive values emerge. Disorder and chaos through misunderstanding the plan, which is so easy to do when you cannot receive the higher pattern because you've choked it off with all of your lesser concrete creations. But instead, right order through right magic, the soul becomes the true magician and one attends successfully to the soul. When we're just in the world of glamour, illusion, and maya, we're using our creative manifestational powers without true guidance of the soul because we cannot contact the soul. Our mind is so concrete, it's engaged with our own non-synchronous creations. The wrong use of speech to bring about chosen objectives and untruth, I suppose, goes with this. So it's a, there's a beneficent repatterning, that's on the other side, and this is a maleficent repatterning, or a maleficent patterning, and using speech to pattern understanding maleficently. Sex magic, the selfish perversion, well, instead, there is a real understanding of the plan and not using the powers, the appreciable powers, for selfish ends, but using these powers to bring about the expression of the divine plan. What's going to be expressed? You know, the seventh ray type of will is the will to express. What type of expression will there be? Will it be the expression simply of the lower personal self with its lower egoic nature? All things designed to satisfy the separative part? Or will it really be a retiring into the silence and attune yourself unto the whole? Then venture forth, and only then and only then, venture forth. So this is the ray which is certainly going to restructure the world. I don't know how many seventh-ray monads are coming in, but a great number of seventh-ray souls that would be, you know, sub-rays of the monadic ray will be entering, and we shall have a reconfigured world. Now, will it be a selfish, highly organized, highly structured reconfiguration, which will be extremely hard to break out of? Or will it be a reconfiguration that really reflects how things are in heaven, i.e. in the higher mental plane, on the triadal levels, and so forth? What we usually call heavens are emotional and even lower mental worlds, and they are not the true heavens. The actual seventh heaven of St. Paul is the logoic plane, as far as I can understand. Each of the planes is a heaven. Of course, they also have their hellish parts, as in the sixth and seventh subplane of the astral plane. But there are summerland types of heavens found on the astral plane, and Devachan itself is a kind of heaven found still within the concrete nature of the planetary logos, but a kind of heaven where quality is built for the next incarnation, and a kind of uninterrupted enjoyment does occur. Some of us try to make heaven on earth The trouble is, do we do so selflessly or selfishly? Is that our own private heaven on earth we would like to make? That we have to understand that if we concentrate too much on making a heaven for ourselves so that our dreams come true and our wishes are fulfilled, we may be using a lot of energy which doesn't do much for any kind of heavenly nature reflected in the whole of humanity and within the whole of the planet. So we looked at these contrasts, and here we can read it once again. The Blessed One sought the pathway into forms, yet held with firmness to the hand of the magician, you might say his major monadic self. He sought to reconcile the pilgrim, who was himself. Whenever the monad goes forth, it's the pilgrim, to life in form, especially in the three lower worlds. He sought to bring about the world, to bring the world of disorder in which he found himself, reincarnationally bound, cyclically returning, into some kind of order, because, as it happens, the elemental lives were not ordered and not serving the higher behests. He wandered without direction, wandered far into the deepest depths, and became immersed in chaos and disorder, the chaotic etheric planes and their chaotic results on the outer level. We are, as first-degree initiates, we try to bring that etheric chaos into some representative, exemplary order, reflective of the order in heaven, and reflective of divine geometry. He could not understand, because thus far he had not the mentality to understand, yet still inwardly held to some higher guidance which really was his own very highest self. He sought to bring about the order that his soul craved. He talked with all he met, outwardly, unfortunately, but his bewilderment increased because of the many points of view which were not coordinated. He must cease to be outwardly oriented. To the magician thus he spoke. He consulted within himself. And the magician can even be, in this case, the solar angel, the angel of the presence, his own higher self on soul planes. Eventually it will be his own Father in heaven. Both will be in a way to him, the magician. The ways of the Creator must be good. There's that inner faith from remaining connected to that part of himself which is part of the Creator. The monad is part of the planetary logos. Between, behind all that which seems to be, must be a plan. He doesn't want to be deluded by the Maya. Teach me the purpose of it all. How can I work, immersed in deepest matter, immersed in the densest levels of the systemic etheric physical plane? Tell me the thing that I must do, and I will be obedient. I won't have to originate this myself. I, being seventh ray, actually seek for a kind of guidance from a pattern or from an authority. The magician said, "Listen, O worker, in the furthest world, the very densest levels, systemically consider, excuse me, to the rhythm of the times, to the cycles coming and going, both rheologically and astrologically. Become an occultist and learn these things. Note the pulsation in the heart of that which is divine. There is a pulsation in the monad. Well, there is a pulsation in the soul as well. There are these great streams of higher idealistic energies which come forth and are intending to lift. So note when there is a stream of redemptive, animating, vitalizing energy, either coming from the soul on its own plane or from the monad. Retire into the silence of your own self and attune yourself into the whole, which you can do instead of the part. Then, and only then, venture forth, establish the right rhythm, the rhythm for the times, the rhythm that is suggested by the inner archetypes. Bring order to the forms of life which must express the plan of deity. Bring order to the forms within humanity and to the forms within the other kingdoms. As far as the fifth kingdom goes, there's going to be order prevailing. For this Blessed One, who is stranded in the lower worlds after having come forth seeking the pathway into forms, release is found in work. He must display his knowledge of the plan, just as this third ray type must do. How can I therefore demonstrate this fact? I wander in illusion. And through my mind I can display the glory of divinity. How can I therefore demonstrate this truth? I wander in illusion. There's a similarity here between the third and the seventh ray, even though the seventh does not, as far as I know, resolve upon the third except through special dispensation as was given by the Master R to his second and third degree initiates. He must display his knowledge of the plan by the sounding of those words, magical words, which will call forth, which will evoke the builders of the forms, those that can respond, the army of the voice, and those who can work intelligently under the command of the human being, and thus create the new. Well, okay, there we have it. Now, what I suggest is we just finish up that last paragraph. As I say, I had to break this because of the suspicion that maybe I wasn't recording at all. It's such a disheartening event when you've spent an hour thinking carefully and wording things as carefully as you can while you're talking, only to discover that, lo and behold, it hasn't been recorded. So I remember, you know, when a person's work is destroyed, well, it could be the work of a day, could be the work of a lifetime. I'm remembering that there was, when I used to go to college, the University of Michigan it was, gosh, starting already 50 years ago. More than that. 53 years ago. There had been a building where the faculty in the history department and various departments had found their offices and all the rest of it, and it wasn't well built, and it was of combustible material, and lo and behold, there was a fire. And in that fire, so much was lost, and I knew a brilliant history professor who basically, in those days of non-Xerox and non-duplication, had lost his entire life's work. And following that, there was a great change. It warped him psychologically, as far as I can see. And he turned to a nihilistic path, a path of anger and resentment and rejection of positivity. So sometimes when crises strike, we have the choice as to how we are to respond, you know. We are always making impressions upon each other. There's so many good things in terms of knowledge that came from this particular man, but somehow I was witness to the way the counterforce took over in his life, and how, and I kind of traced it back to this event. And I was told, you know, that some people who knew of the situation had said, well, ever since the fire, he's never been the same. Well, we're going to lose everything, you know. I mean, we're going to lose everything in the three worlds because there's nothing here, really. We're going to lose it. And all then is lost and gained. These three... what does it say? These three provide, whatever they do. It's in the second ray stanza. All then is lost and gained. I think it's in the stanzas of the solar angels, which are coming up right away. These three produce the merging. That's it, isn't it? All then is lost and gained. So, for the second-ray type, and really for all types, we cannot expect that we can hold magnetically to any temporary configuration, any temporary association of energies. All is in movement. All is temporarily, magnetically interplaying with other factors. Everything interplaying with other factors, and nothing, there is no permanent relation. The only thing that is permanent is that which is really out of all relation, because it has no parts, and yet there is nothing other than it. Well, that is the dogma, so to speak, but we have to realize that, in fact, it may be true, and we have to realize that it is more than simply a platitude. To see the One at all times, to feel the One, to breathe the One, to be the One, and to wear thin the veil of ignorance, which prevents us from realizing ourselves as the One. We get caught up in the contents of consciousness, whatever they may be. They can be very high contents. We can still get caught up in them and fail to realize we are the one. That's what I owe to my teacher, or the teacher before Master DK. The realization of the one. He was a living example of that. I just get all, you know, when I think about this individual and what a difference he made in my life, I realize what a difference we can make in the lives of people whose lives we touch, for good or for ill, and I'm sure we've all done both. Well, the last little part of this says, a close study of the above suggested phrases showing as they do the wrong and right major expression of the ray force. When we say wrong, we can mean early, before reorientation. The wrong and right, well, there it is, you know, good and evil, evil and good. And the right major expressions of ray force, major expressions, not all expressions, but the ones he's chosen to discuss because they are prominent and important, will aid the student correctly to comprehend his own ray nature. And that's what, you know, the people reading esoteric psychology want to do. It's written, it's said, for initiates of the first degree, which can take you really all the way to the second degree. Maybe beyond the second degree we know something else, but I know many, what I consider to be initiates of the second degree, who do very well reading esoteric psychology, and I think there are aspects of it which would apply even beyond that, of course. So when DK gives all these names of ray lords and the different stanzas in the old commentary relating to different processes, he's hoping that they will help us comprehend our own ray nature. And also, whereabouts he stands in his development. Is he between the two? Well, I don't think anyone is entirely given to the lower or so-called bad representation of the ray, the early representation of the ray. We've come a long way, all of us, and we are not generally trapped in the lower expression of the ray. And where do we stand in our development, or have we entered truly the higher expression of the ray, and can we look at these stanzas and look at these lists and say, aha, this is I, this is what I'm doing. But remember that, in a way, although these stanzas can be interpreted in terms of the personality and the soul also, they really are, in my view anyway, related to the descent of the monad, who rushes like an arrow into matter, you know, or builds himself an ark, or rolls himself within a veil, or rushes forth to combat with all that's found in the lower worlds, or who came forth in ignorance and not knowing where he was, or who sought the way, but caught the vision of the way, but the way was leading downward, and he pursued it destructively and furiously, or the one who simply wants to, the Blessed One sought the pathway into the world of forms, because that's what the monad must do. On its redemptive mission, it must enter the worlds of lower forms in order to carry out that Virgoan, Piscean, redemptive pilgrimage to raise the substance of the previous solar system up to the quality of this solar system. That is our commitment, and those lives that are caught in that substance, and I suppose eventually even some of the members of the Black Lodge who are captivated by the world of lower substance, not having wanted to give up their privileges and prerogatives from a previous solar system, and thus failing to move on, obstructing their own way. One of the major faults of disciples today is the paying of too close attention paying of too close attention to the faults, errors, and activities of other disciples, and too little attention to their own fulfillment of the law of love and to their own dharma and work. Well, it's a lot easier to see the, the mote in another's eye than the beam in one's own, and somehow it allows us to defer our work when we're, it feels like we're doing something when we're busy criticizing the lack of integrity of another, but let's just say that energy is better spent overcoming the great army of lower self. What does the Buddha say? That he who overcomes himself, conquers himself, is this one who has conquered 100 armies, or does he say 1,000 armies? It's the most difficult of tasks, and we simply defer the task by busying ourselves with the ill-doings, apparent ill-doings of others. So we have to work out our own ray structure, and we have to fulfill within our own nature, no matter what ray we're on, the law of love. We have to see with clarity our purpose in Dharma and not talk with all we met, or even one we met, who may throw us off the track. We have to attend to our own insight, which may be worth more than 5, 10, 20 expert opinions. Sometimes it's interesting to get an expert opinion, someone that you respect, let's say spiritually, and someone who you think has objectivity, but in the last analysis, the final court of appeal is your own inner consciousness, and do we have the courage to adhere to what our own inner consciousness says? So one of the major faults of disciples today is the paying of too close attention to the faults and errors of other disciples, and not enough attention to really sorting out their own inner and outer life. A second failing of disciples, and particularly among the working and accepted disciples, notice pretty much, let's just say that if you want to be an accepted disciple, well, you're going to be, no question about it, a working disciple. There are many probationary disciples who are involved with simply learning and going along and coming in touch with one exciting idea or perspective after another, and where's the real work? An accepted disciple is a working disciple. The second failing among the working and accepted disciples is incorrect speech conveying ambiguous meanings and motivated by criticism or by an individual desire to shine. Even among accepted disciples, because speech, if kept to its basic essentials, will really be a tool for the manifestation of the plan. How do we use our speech? What happens as a result of our speech? Is the plan closer to being manifested, or have we created obstructions somehow to the manifestation of the plan? Sometimes I think so. In the olden days, I think, you know, this is, I think he's going to refer to Pythagorean days. The neophyte was forced into a prolonged silence at first, and maybe for 3 years. Speech was not permitted. You kind of wonder whether that's not a bad idea. Now we live in very independent days. Our throat center has been liberated. We think we can say or do anything we like, at least among modern Western man we can, though there are groups that want to deny that privilege for totalitarian reasons, as far as I can see. But in the old days, creating obstructions through speech was mercifully stopped by the demand that the aspirant not speak. Of course, under such circumstances, he would become very aware of his thought, and maybe that's one of the purposes as well, because the thought of the power of speech would be banked up and become the power of thought. So one could become very aware of thought under these circumstances. So this was inculcated as a check upon physical utterance of wrong words and ideas based on inadequate knowledge, and really it saved the community and also saved the individual from what we can call self-obstruction, creating the forms that would block his way. Our thoughts are always coming in the way of the impression of reality. DK, that's why DK tells us, keep silence and the light will enter in. Well, as I say, we're very independent today. We value our speech highly, even our, not just our desultory speech under the earth or our purposeful speech under Saturn, but our liberated speech under Uranus. These are days of liberation. The Lords of Liberation have affected humanity, and liberty is one of the first results, and free speech and the liberation of the throat center have resulted. Free speech, which is the ability to utter what the mind thinks and conceives, regardless of its impact upon present structures. Of course, there are limits, naturally. I'm remembering, was it the Chief Justice, John Marshall, an early Chief Justice, was he the first? He said, yes, freedom of speech, but no one has the right to yell fire in an overcrowded theater. Well, you know, the death of many, the trampling of many, as happens often today, could be attributed then to the misuse of the free speech. So one must use this prerogative with great discretion. Today, the neophyte must learn the same lesson of attention to personal perfection and to personal work through the means of that inner silence which broods over the disciple and forces him to attend to his own work and business. Well, we're all on the path of self-perfection. You know, there is a city, a quality, on the fourth subplane of the atmic plane where the masters range and work, which is called perfection. So we're trying to refine and beautify and perfect our instrument. So the neophyte must learn the same lesson of attention to personal perfection and to personal work through the means of an inner silence, not just the outer silence, right? Okay, so not just the outer silence. Yeah. Which broods over the disciple and forces him to attend to his own work and business. It's funny how Alice Bailey emphasized this idea. And so the Tibetan just said, well, you know, mind your own business. Well, we all may be one and all may be one, but still there is the necessary and actual illusion of separation, and that is all for a purpose. So deal with what it is you have to do particularly, and don't worry so much about the other. Leaving the others free to do the same, and so learn the lesson of experience, how to stick to one's own direction and business and leave others free. And we saw that with the sixth ray, you know, the inclusive idealism and the willingness to let others proceed according to their own best ideas without interference. A great deal of present right activity is hindered by the speech interplay between disciples, and much time is lost through wordy discussion of the work and activities of other disciples. So we are to become what DK says, if we hear the criticism, we are to become the cul-de-sac. It just goes no further, and we do not engage in what he seems to suggest is the thrill of gossip. Humanity as a whole needs silence at this time as never before. One of those great sentences. And that's so that the higher worlds can actually get through. Right now, the noise deflects entirely, almost entirely. It needs time in which to reflect come into rapport with the higher world, perhaps finding itself as the shadow or reflection of the monad by being focused within the causal body. There is the time taken to reflect that higher name, that higher pattern, and the opportunity to sense the universal rhythm. Then this goes to retire into this silence and attune yourself unto the whole, then venture forth. So a study of astrology is very useful here, you know. What are the cycles of Saturn, of Jupiter? What are the rapid cycles of Mercury and Venus? What about the reconstructive cycles of Uranus, or the proliac dissolving cycles of Neptune? I mean, with Neptune in Pisces at this time, we can expect a kind of prolia for the sixth ray age, or for the age of Pisces. The handwriting is kind of on the wall, and many things that we have cherished will simply slip out of our hands, the slippery nature of Pisces, the elusive nature of Neptune. Every once in a while, decay pauses to remind us of who we are and what we need to do. Modern disciples, if they are to do their work as desired and to cooperate with the plan correctly, need that inner reflective quiet, which in no way negates intense outer activity, which does release them from wordy criticisms, which they might be the ones making, feverish discussions animated by the solar plexus and constant preoccupation with the Dharma, the motives, and the methods of their fellow disciples. Well, do you think it's an important paragraph? Should it be sent out emblazoned in gold? Shall we have one of those laminated copies sent to everyone, put on the wall? So much unnecessary discussion of each other. We might learn a little bit in the process when we have a group that is interested in discussing each other's approach for learning purposes, but generally, usually the quality of criticism is accompanying this kind of discussion. So DK has given us something of great value here. He's given us seven stanzas of the Blessed Ones, of the monads going into incarnation. Of course, once the higher mental plane is reached, then that incarnation continues via the soul. Even though the monad has already, before that causal body was created, ventured into incarnation in the group soul configurations via a physical permanent atom, an astral permanent atom, and so forth. There has been an in-metallization, in-vegetalization, in-zoonation of the monad long before there could be a direct impact on the rising kingdoms by that divine center of consciousness, which can abstract and withdraw the monad back up into itself. So there would be the great homecoming of the prodigal son to the father's house. But much time occurs before that. Let us close here with the sounding of the great invocation. We'll use, I'm a little bit, what I've done is used a view that is perhaps just a little bit too small. Let's see if I do this, what happens? Oh, that'll do it. Okay. So, note G. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, this is the end of the Blessed One webinar commentaries, number 13, and what page should we be on here? I think there are various ways to tell. Maybe the best way to tell is this. Okay, we can't go any farther. That's why. So, this is page 44. Page 44 of Esoteric Psychology 2. And beginning next with the, maybe the angel of the Presence commentaries, and it goes on just beyond our work here. Starts around page 45, right here. The rays and the initiation, rays and initiation, and this deals specifically with initiation. What we dealt with earlier was the coming forth of the monad and its entire pilgrimage, and now we're dealing with a specific phase of the unfoldment of the human being, the time at which the real merging with the solar angel occurs. We can consider this the third initiation and the wider door that looms before man. So we'll take that up, and I think there's some very specific references and hints. He doesn't say too much about it, really, just a little bit, and that's all. Just a few pages, but I'm sure that it will be very rich in our consideration. So that will be it for the moment, and we'll see you when I undertake these Angel of the Presence commentaries, also in Esoteric Psychology too. Okay, we'll see you then. Bye-bye.